From a secret location in room 100 of 540 Jack Gibbs Boulevard, this is Craft. I'm your host, Doug Dangler. Lynn Cullen is the author of I Am Rembrandt's Daughter, Reign of Madness, The Creation of Eve, and most recently, Mrs. Poe, literary fiction about the famous poet. She will be in Columbus with the Thurber House on Tuesday, May 6th. Welcome to Craft, Lynn Cullen.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Your latest, Mrs. Poe, is set in New York City in 1845 during the time of Edgar Allan Poe's greatest success with his poem, The Raven. How did you get interested in this time period?
It was just something that was magical. I have no previous background in that time period. And about 2 years ago, I was desperately looking for something to write about. At that time, remember, it was right in the middle of the recession. My husband was unemployed. My book that I had been working on was turned down by my publisher. And right during all this, my husband came down with meningitis and nearly died. And when I brought him home from the hospital, I was faced with the reality that I would, at that time, I didn't know if he was going to be better or not. And I was worried that I would have to take care of us. And here it was on writing. And so I was just absolutely frantic. And so I brought him home from the hospital. And that evening, I was kind of pacing around, sort of delirious myself. And Poe popped in my head. I have no idea why. I don't have a background, like I said, in Poe. I have plenty of background now, but at that time, no. So anyway, I looked him up, and I liked that he was an underdog. I love writing about underdogs. And I also saw how he was really maligned by history, and we might be able to get to that later. But what really intrigued me is that he, most likely, I think he actually did have an affair with a poet named Frances Osgood. And what I loved about her is that she was a single mom. Her husband had abandoned her. And she had her kids to support, and she was trying to do it on writing. And writing is never a sure bet that in any era, and it was definitely even worse back then. So I was absolutely intrigued by her and drawn to her because, you know, I really felt that she was a kindred spirit at that time in my life. So all the angst that you see in the pages of the book of her fearing for her being able to take care of them through her writing, and also the highs and the lows of writing are all in there based on, you know, my own experiences.
I have to say I'm a little surprised to hear that writing isn't a sure bet. That is just strange and unusual, and everybody I've talked to has always said that this is the road to unlimited wealth, that writing is one of the surest bets that you can get into.
Right.
Was there a particular Poe work? Like I said, The Raven, I think, plays a large part in it because that's partially why he's so famous at the time.
Right.
What's your favorite Poe work?
I actually kind of laugh a little bit at The Raven in the book, which is sort of my sentiment in some way. I find that it's a really catchy poem, and it's what catapulted him to fame. I mean, everybody in New York, and in fact in the U.S., was talking about The Raven. It would be hard to imagine it now, somebody talk, or, you know, the whole country talking about a poem, but they were, and kids would follow him down the street, flapping their wings, you know, pretending that he was a raven. They did. And, they worked the word nevermore into conversation or plays, or it was just a catchphrase.
He was the Miley Cyrus of his time. Is that what you're getting at?
He was.
We've come to so far. We've gone from working nevermore into conversations to following Miley Cyrus. That's great.
Right. Right. But so anyhow, that's the poem that got him famous. But it's not my favorite. I really love Ulalum. And in fact, I based my story around Ulalum. I feel like there are clues. It's not just me, but some other scholars feel like this too, that there are clues in there about his relationship with Frances Osgood. And in fact, there are people, I'm one of them, who thinks that they had a child together. And there are clues to this in Ulalum. But I love the poem anyhow. It's really weird. I've never had this happen reading a poem. But when I read it, I actually hear a a volcano erupting and lava flowing. It's strange, but you know, he has that image in it, but it just kind of roars in my head when I read it. I don't know. It's unique for me. But anyhow, those poems had a lot to do with the book.
Okay.
And the raven is actually in the front of the book because it was what brought them together. You know, he was so famous, she wanted to meet him, and right. He wanted to meet her.
Okay. So what were some of the best sources you consulted for your work on this historical fiction on Edgar Allan Poe? Because I'm assuming you had to do a lot of background. You've got, on your website, a whole list of characters that are historical
yeah.
characters that are all related to the book that make appearances in the book, like P.T. Barnum and other well-known folks from the era like that. So how did you go about doing research? What was your best route?
There's so many different things you have to do. But one of the best leads to this whole story was that in 1845, a woman by the name of Anne Charlotte Lynch started what she called conversaciones. And what they are is book club. She started the first book club. And it was a huge success. And so reading up on this, the people who came to her book club were the people who made it in my book. And they're famous people, like Walt Whitman and Horace Greeley and Margaret Fuller and Melville, you name it, all these people came at that time period. And then just reading up on these people, I would read, you know, just about the era, and I'd find other people who were in New York City at the time. Nobody who appears in my book couldn't have been there. I've done the research, and all these folks could have been in New York. They're documented to be in New York during this time period. So it's not something I made up. These people were all there at this time. People that we just take for granted. There was an actual guy who invented graham crackers. He appears in it. So Sylvester Graham. So all these characters, Audubon, he makes a little appearance. They were all there during the time of the Raven, and so many of them went to this conversation. And the house, this brownstone, is still there by Greenwich. Well, it's in Greenwich Village. It's right by Washington Square Park, about six doors down from Washington Square Park.
Right. I think I saw on your Facebook you visited that, and there's a picture of you getting ready to walk into the house or something along those lines, or just break into the house. I'm not really sure whether it's open for the public.
Unfortunately, it's not, and I didn't get in. Yes, it's a picture of my imminent break-in. No, the house is actually being renovated, and so there were workmen and stuff around. I've been visiting it now for 3 years in a row. Hmm. I was just there a few weeks ago, and it's still not done. But anyhow, I felt like if the workmen could tramp up and down the steps on the porch there, mm-hmm. it is okay if I took a little picture. Got up there myself, but it's a private residence,
right? Okay, yeah, that's it's I guess that's good and bad. You know, maybe it'll be a historical landmark sometime later, but maybe not after the renovation.
The nice thing is, if you want to see what it looked like, they have in New York City, just a few blocks away, a museum called the Merchant's House Museum. And it's from that same time period, and they have it furnished because some eccentric lady lived there. She was born in 1840, I think, or so. And she never changed her furniture. She died in her 90s, about 1920 or so. And her nephew kept the house. And so everything was furnished just like in the time of Poe, of the Raven. And back then, all the houses were laid out the same. People did not have different plans. So
right.
This is a great resource. You can go in there, and there it is. It looks exactly like a house where the conversaciones were, or where Francis Osgood stayed. So it's really cool. It's on my Facebook page, too, and there's also some on my website, pictures.
Before you wrote Mrs. Poe, you wrote some other historical fiction, and you wrote some young adult fiction. What was the catalyst that led you to go from something like young adult fiction to the historical fiction?
Well, you know, I started out in children's, like I did what's called middle grade novels, you know, for kids 8 to 12. I did a number of those, and then I had picture books, which are for even younger. It's a weird route. And then I thought I would do adult books as my own kids got older. Because part of my interest in children's books was just that's what I had time for when I had my kids at home. I Right. have three daughters, all born within 4 years. And so I just had to have work that, you know, wasn't so time intensive.
Right.
But I wrote I Am Rembrandt's Daughter. That's a young adult book. Mm-hmm. But I really meant for it to be an adult book. But since I was in children's, my agent gave it to my children's editor, who was supposed to give it to the adult division, but it never left her hand. But, you know, it worked out. I was really sad because I thought, oh, my chance to be, you know, break into adult books is ruined. But that young adult, for some crazy reason, was picked up by Barnes & Noble as a Discover Great New Writers. And that really did a lot for my career and helped me to, you know, make the jump then into adult fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So it all is a very long road that I've taken, like 20-some years. But I don't know if I recommend it, but it sure has been fun.
It does seem to be a theme here, some ambiguity about the writing life. And that it's a common theme, I think, that there are people wondering how they got into this profession. They felt like it was more of a calling, I think, although in your case, you had a calling to sort of make ends meet. And in a way that actually, as you were saying, it reminded me so much of Poe that I can see some of the attractions to that you would have in there. What other things are you working on now? Do you have a Mrs. Poe, the sequel? That's going to be hard to pull off, I think, but is there something, what's next?
There is. Actually, I'm in the process of packing to go to Italy, and this is not going to make sense, but I'm working on a book about Twain. But Twain spent time in Italy, thank goodness. He wasn't just in Hannibal. and the book takes place actually when he was an older guy in his final years. And so anyhow, I get to go to Italy and do a little research on Twain.
And that's part of the sacrifice that you make being a writer. You know, you know, having to go to Italy instead of Hannibal, Missouri, which again, there seemed like there was some ambiguity there as well. I got to say that you.
I probably have to go to Hannibal. In fact, I'm sure it'll be charming. But you know, Italy is kind of going to be fun. But yeah, being a writer, I should never gripe. Because it's been really good to me, and I love it. And if I don't write, I actually feel sick. I have to write. And I think other writers would understand that. Mm-hmm. It's just something you have to do, or you just don't feel well. So that's the real catch, is having something that you love so much and such a passion and just part of your makeup. To have to make money at that. That's what the real ambiguity, the real, you know, difficulty comes in, mm-hmm. is that, you know, having to make money at something that is such a part of your soul. And I've not had to sell out. I refuse to, you know, like to write, to pander, to make money. But you know, on the other hand, have to be aware of that, you know, of reaching readers. Like, for example, I knew that writing about Poe, once I discovered him and Francis, would be of more interest than a book I did earlier is about Juana the Mad in Spain. I just knew I had a better chance of getting readers in the U.S. was a more familiar person. Mm-hmm. So you do have to be aware of making a connection with readers. But on the other hand, I think it's very important to be right about real stuff and real emotions and something true about the human condition.
Right.
That's why. That's when it feels good.
Yeah. You know, it's funny when I saw the Reign of Madness, the book that you're referencing there, in sitting next to the book about Poe, I also wondered if there was some thematic stuff going on there, writing about people who've had or maybe well known for experiencing mental illness in the way that I think Poe has more in the years since his death had that mystique of madness around him than I think was actually the case in real life. But, you know, it's really an interesting connection.
Yeah, well, you've touched on a few things that are really important there. And the first of them is that he is thought to be mad. That is his mystique, as you say. And I explore that in the book because that is all a product of his arch rival, a man by the name of Rufus Griswold. And Griswold hated Poe in life. He was angry because Poe was a fellow critic. You know, they both were, that's how they made money. They were critics of poetry and right. plays and that kind of thing. And Poe was getting all the critic jobs. Also, Poe, and when he was doing some of his critical work, he put down Griswold's poetry collection, and that made Griswold crazy with anger. He was a real hothead. He was known to be kind of a nut. I mean, he was such a nut that when his wife died, who he would have nothing to do with when she was alive, they lived in different cities, but when his wife died, he went home and clung to her dead body, and they had to pry him off of her. And then 30 days later, he had her dug up, and he cut her hair, and again, clung to her dead body, and they had to pry him off. So this guy, he's the actual nut, and he had the nerve to go and make Poe look crazy. And he was made the literary executor to, well, to Poe's papers, which is another interesting twist in the story, which is all true. It's so crazy. It's hard to believe it's true. But he had Poe's papers, and he proceeded to doctor his letters and, you know, just made Poe look crazy. And he told these insane stories about Poe. He even said that Poe had an affair with his aunt. I mean, he wouldn't stop. He just, you know, there's no limit to the slander he did to Poe after Poe died. And people wanted to believe it, and it didn't help that Poe's work is so dark. So I think people confused him with some of the characters in his book, you know, all these murderers and madmen. But he was not a murderer or a madman. He was simply a guy who wrote these kind of titillating stories to make money. Because as you touched on earlier, Poe was always desperate to make money. He's a poor guy, and he didn't have the advantages of say, Longfellow and other guys who married well. He was trying to support them, and so he did write these stories that were really not what he wanted to write. But anyhow, they kind of worked against him because he has this terrible reputation, which is not true. And that's one thing I hope to correct with Mrs. Poe's book.
We'll look forward to you telling us about those corrections on Tuesday, May 6th, when you're at the Thurber House, which is also, I don't know if it's quite from the era of Poe, but it's a pretty old house. I think it's over 100 years old now. So you can wander around through that house and imagine Columbus madness that might rival Poe's.
Yes, I can't wait.
Yeah, it's pretty darn old. It's a great place to visit, though. Well, Lynn Cullen, I thank you very much for talking to me today on Craft. And again, looking forward to hearing about your book, Mrs. Poe, on Tuesday, May 6th.
Thank you very much. Been a pleasure.
For more information from my guests, visit www.craftheshow.com. This is Doug Dangler. Until next time, be creative.